You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
Well, today's topic is on discipline, and I thought it would be good to think about, what are we disciplining toward? Where are we going with our training of our kids? But I wanted to introduce our family because you'll be seeing, and I'll be sharing some stories. Sorry, Jenny. Anyway, on the far right is our oldest, Michelle, and she married Tom. And they've been married 5-6 years. And then Jenny is in the middle, and her husband, Tyler, and their son, Calvin. So I'm experiencing grandparenting, awesome time of life. And then our youngest, Daniel, who married Naomi. And I just am sharing this because not only am I going to be talking about them, but, you know, I have to give God credit for our family, because statistically, Joe and I should not have put together a good marriage or a good family, because, you know, I came from a single parent home. My dad left when I was 4. He was an alcoholic. He was abusive. Joe was in an alcoholic home as well. His parents stayed together, but it was very dysfunctional. And so I have to say, if God can put us two together and put together a family, he can do anything. Because, you know, we shouldn't be able to put together a family according to our world. But I'm thankful that God does not go by statistics. So, you know, thinking about parenting, I think it's the most joyous thing I've ever done, but I think it's the hardest thing I've ever done, most difficult. You think about it, you know, there's no manual. You come home with a baby, whether it's adopted or whether you birthed it, you're like, there's no manual with this. There's no yearly review. You don't get taken into the office. It's like, this is how well you're doing. Or, you know, real-time feedback. There's no, you're on duty 24/7. There's no sick time. There's no vacation time. You're constantly, at least I was constantly wondering, am I doing it right? You know, am I doing too much? Am I doing not enough? And then each kid is different. You're like, oh, this worked with this one, but it doesn't work with this one. And each parent is different. People parent differently. There's different families. And then you come to discipline, and that, I think that's a difficult time. You know, what worked with one child doesn't work with another. And then if you add trials into your life, which everyone is going to experience trials in their life, you might have a child that's sick. You might be sick. You might have, death in the family. You might have mental health issues. You know, it just complicates it all the more. And so you can be totally overwhelmed. I was totally overwhelmed by parenting. But thank God, he is actively involved. If we, you know, follow him, he is actively involved with our kids and with our families and with us. And I am thankful for these meetings. I attended these meetings early on, and I was like picking everyone's brain on, what do you do about this? What do you do about that? You know, and that's, so community is a gift from God that we can then parent together. So hopefully this morning, when we have a few discussion questions, we can learn from each other. So let's talk about discipline. What is discipline? Well, I'm going to talk about what it's not. It's not punishing. We're not into punishing our kids or being domineering and controlling. Yes, we're in control, but that's different than being controlling and domineering. We don't get into power struggles. It's not a way to get revenge. You know, sometimes you feel that way, don't you? You're like, you are going to get something. And it's not so our life goes smoother. I mean, that's not what discipline's about. Discipline is about them. It's instruction, it's training, it's focused on their growth, on their personal growth, and it's focused on their future. It's forward moving. You know, if you compare the two, the purpose of punishment, what is it? It's to inflict penalty because of what they did. But the purpose of discipline is to train and correct for maturity. You're working towards something. For the focus of punishment is past misdeeds, what they did, and then you punish them. But for discipline and training, you're working towards something. So you're disciplining to correct what they should do in the future. And so it's a training. The attitude for punishment from the parent is, yeah, I am pissed and I'm going to get you. But the discipline, it's out of love and concern for the child and that you're trying to work them toward maturity. And when we go with punishment, the result is going to be they're going to feel fear and guilt and rebellion. But with discipline, they're going to feel secure. They're going to, you know, they push our boundaries all the time, right? And it's not that they really want to be in control. They act like they do. But if we gave them full control, that would make them very insecure. Because they would feel like, oh my gosh, I'm a boss and I'm only three. That's a problem. This book is what I read over the summer. It's a new one by Andy Stanley. I like this author and his wife, and they wrote it together. I would say, maybe a little side note, I think they probably had compliant kids. So some of their examples or things that they did, I was like, that would never have worked with some of my kids. But I think their principles are really good, and I think some of the points they made and the whole overall thesis of it is that they are into relational parenting, which is what I think is so important. And Dennis wrote his book on relational parenting, which is awesome. I would highly recommend that book. But this is what they say. Discipline makes a person better. Punishment rarely makes anybody better. It simply makes them more careful and perhaps bitter, not better. He says, the message of punishment is this. If you don't obey me, bad things will happen to you. And if you inconvenience or embarrass me, then I'll inconvenience you and embarrass you. There's rarely any positive or permanent change other than to the relationship. Yeah, you lose your influence when you do the punishment. So why do we discipline? Well, first of all, God disciplines us. He says in Hebrews 12, the Lord disciplines the one he loves. And he chastens everyone he accepts as his sons. He also assumes that we do the same. He says, for what children are not disciplined by their father and mother? If you're not disciplined and everyone undergoes discipline, then you're not legitimate, not true sons and daughters at all. He says, moreover, we all have had human fathers who disciplined us and we respected them for it. How much more should we submit to the Father of the spirits and live? They disciplined us for a little while as they knew best, but God disciplines us for our good in order that we may share in his holiness. So God disciplines us, and he assumes we're going to discipline our children. So that's why we do it. We also do it because kids need boundaries, right? And this book by Cloud and Townsend, I think, is really good. Also, it's Boundaries with Kids. They say this, a boundary is a property line that defines a person. It defines where one person ends and someone else begins. A child needs to know where she begins and what she needs to take responsibility for, right? I'm a visual learner, so I like to have illustrations to help me remember things. And so here is a boundary illustration that I learned from a class. You have your house and you have your neighbor's house, right? And you wouldn't feel like you could walk into your neighbor's house and say, I'm going to paint the walls blue. And I'm going to rearrange your kitchen because I think it's in a mess. And I'm going to put my pictures on the wall. You know, they'd be like, who are you? Get out of here. Because there's a property line. You know, this is a boundary. You don't do that. Well, there's boundaries in our relationships. There's a boundary. You know, you are responsible for your choices, your feelings, your behavior, your body. You know, all that is our responsibility. And your child, we are training our children to take responsibility for their feelings, for their choices, for their behavior. It's not our, you know, we can't control that. That they have to learn how to take responsibility for those things. They say children are not born with boundaries. They internalize boundaries from external relationships, from our relationship, from our disciplining them. They say, in order for children to learn who they are and what they are responsible for, their parents have to have clear boundaries with them and relate to them in ways that help them learn how to own their boundaries. So what is external becomes internal as the years go. So if boundaries are clear, we're clear with our kids, then there's going to be positive things, qualities that occur. You'll give them a defined sense of who they are. They'll know what they are responsible for and what they're not responsible for. They'll know what they have that they have the ability to choose and understand that their choices have consequences. And they'll have potential for healthy relationships, because you have to have boundaries to have good relationships. If we don't have developed boundaries with our kids, then they're going to have a hard time saying no to hurtful people. They're going to have a hard time saying no to their impulses. They're going to have a hard time hearing no from other people. And they're going to have a hard time having healthy relationships. So it's really key that we set up boundaries. So we need to discipline our kids. But we got to think about, okay, great. What are we going toward, though? What is our goal? What are we aiming for? In their book, they said, our observation, and I found this true in my own life, is that most parents are so busy parenting, they never stop considering, what are we parenting to? What are we parenting for? They're too busy to stop and consider the end game, the goal, the prize, and the win. And that's something we need to pause and really think about. And they said, if you don't hit pause long enough to consider the direction in which you're parenting, you may wake up one day to the realization that you parented in the wrong direction. By wrong, I mean you parented in a direction you would not have chose if you stopped long enough to choose. The folks who decide on a direction ahead of time usually end up somewhere on purpose. And he says, direction determines destination. If your parenting style, habits, responses, approach to discipline is not dictated by a predetermined win, it will be dictated by your circumstances, your culture, the reactions of your children, and the expectation of others. So we got to be proactive is basically what he's saying. Parenting becomes a whirlwind. I think you all know that. You probably experienced it on the way here. In the whirlwind, parenting is reduced to reacting rather than leading, reacting to the immediate instigation rather than leading toward a predetermined destination. So this is why I like this book. I mean, he wrote that book, Visioneering, and so he has vision, you know, and he's saying work toward that vision. So that's why I titled this, Discipline with the End in Mind, because I think especially when they're little, you're like, where am I going with this child? What are we heading toward? So what are we? What is the end in mind? Well, I think for discipline, for training, we're trying to raise healthy, independent kids, right? So by the time that they're 18, they should be pretty independent. Not that they don't need you anymore, but that they should be, you know, becoming more adult. That means internal control. Instead of having to have external controls, they've gained internal control. They've learned to make their own decisions. They can defend their own values. They can build healthy relationships. And we want them to be productive members of society and the body of Christ. That's kind of what we're aiming for. And so God is into this, you know, strong relationships, strong character. I think God values relationships and character. We see this in the Word, in the New Testament, you know, in Matthew, where he says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, all your mind, and love others as yourself. And so he's into relationships. He's also into character, and you need character to build healthy relationships, right? He says the fruit of the Spirit is love. And how does that look? Well, joy, peace, forbearance, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Those are all character issues that we want to develop in our children so that they can put together healthy relationships. So the role of discipline is going from, you know, the young to the old, low independence. Your kids at that age, 0 to 5, is very dependent on you. And so you need high parental control. Again, difference between having control and being controlling. You know, it seems like it's the same, but there is a difference. You are setting boundaries. You're setting expectations. And we'll go through some of this later on. But by the time they're 18, you have less parental control. In other words, you're not trying to control them. They should be able to make some decisions. They should be able to have internal control by then. A common error is when they're young, because they are so cute, you give them lots of freedom, but then that is going to bite you in the you know what by the time they hit 18, because then you're going to be like, oh my God, they're out of control. I got to control them. And they're like, nope, you lost your influence. So this is why, you know, you end up having a adult baby. You don't want that. So this is why we got to think, how are we going to discipline to the end in mind? We got to work, you ease up the reins as they get older and older. So how do we get there? I think the first one, and is key, because you want influence in your kid's life, you got to have relational investment. You got to spend that time. Some authors call it filling their emotional tanks, their love banks. This book was a book I read early on in parenting. You probably all have heard it, by Campbell and Ross, or Ross Campbell and Chapman, I mean. It's the five love languages of children. And he says, every child has an emotional tank, a place of emotional strength that can fuel him through the challenging days of childhood and adolescence. By speaking your child's love language, you can fill his emotional love tank with love. When your child feels loved, he is much easier to discipline and train than when his emotional tank is running near empty. As we found that true in our own. So these are the love languages, and the point that they make is you might be speaking a love language that they don't hear, and so they don't feel loved, and you're like, what do you mean? I, you know, gave you words of affirmation. They're like, well, I like physical touch, and you never did that. And so, you know, we got to speak their language so that their love tank gets filled. We decided early on that we would have dates with each of our kids every week. And that is a time commitment. I know when we, you know, started with one, it was easy. When we had two, you could just switch, you know. When we had three, it was like, oh my gosh, this is six time slots. But it was so worth it. And I was fortunate enough to be a stay-at-home mom. And, you know, for me, a lot of stay-at-home moms were like, they don't schedule that because they're with them all day long. But I know my temperament, and I knew I needed to schedule it, because if I don't schedule it, it's not going to happen. I wouldn't, like, I scheduled it so I could make it a focused time, not doing dishes, not being, you know, distracted by other things, and make it a fun time, make it an enjoyable time. And then also by scheduling it, they were able to look forward to it. They knew, okay, this is something I get to do with Dad, or this is something I get to do with Mom. So the relational investment goes a long way, and it will give you influence so that when you discipline, you will have influence on them. It's like a relational bank, you know. You're making deposits by spending time and investing, so that when you do have to discipline and when you do have to say a hard thing to your child, they're not at a deficit. It's not going to tank them, because they know you love them. And so when you make a withdrawal, it's not going to, you know, they're not going to be at a deficit. So how do we get there? Well, we do the emotional relating, spend that time with them. But I think this is what this book by Stanley, I thought was really good. It gives you stages of parenting. And you got to understand there are stages of parenting. And they give it four stages. They say discipline years are 0 to 5, training, then coaching, and then friendship. And so you can see, like that graph I showed you, you know, the discipline, high control, and then the training, you're easing up as you go, as they get older. And this is what they say. These four stages provide a framework for evolving the parent-child relationship as our kids grow up and move from one stage to another. In each stage, the approach to parenting is different. A common issue is kids move from one stage to the next without any effort, but parents don't. And that's where I remember my battles being, is like I was still treating some of our kids in a stage that I should have been moving on, because they moved on. Parents have to consciously adjust their approach as kids seamlessly transition from one stage to the next, and too many parents never do. You've probably seen a dad who seems stuck in the discipline years. His child may be in middle school, yet he employs the immediate consequences that were necessary when the child was 2, not 12. They're going to lose influence by doing that. Or maybe you know a mom who's stuck in the coaching stage even though her child was grown. Guilty. She sees her phone calls home as opportunities to offer unsolicited advice and unasked for opinions. It's like, I didn't ask for that. Even worse, we've all encountered that mom or dad who decides to be friends with their child too early. They neglect training and coaching in an effort to be liked by their kid and their kid's friends. And that is going to be a fatal error because you're going to lose influence. When parents don't evolve their parenting as their child develops, they undermine their influence with their child. Remember, your kids move on to the next stage, whether you do or not. And so that, I wish I would have had this book back then because I knew something, you know, it just kind of put a framework for me on like, oh, this is what was happening. And Jenny can be a witness of it. All right, so we're going to go through the four stages for the rest of the time. So the discipline years. This is where you teach your child what is right and wrong, what, you know, and the consequences, that they have consequences to their actions, whether it's good consequence or bad consequence. This is a time where you strengthen what they call the child's obedience muscle. And through multiple repetitions, you know how many times you have to say, don't touch that, don't touch that, right? Don't eat that. Don't put that pine cone in your mouth. This happened last night when we were babysitting. Calvin wanted to put a pine cone in. No, don't put that in your mouth. You know, you have to repeat, repeat, repeat. They say, and I thought this was very key, someone will discipline your kids. It can be you starting early and being consistent while the stakes are low. Or later, it can be a teacher or a principal with consequences like failing grades and suspensions. Or it can be a police officer and a judge with fines, community service, or sadly, jail time or in prison. And I had a former student this many, many years ago who did not get disciplined in his home. He was running the house. And he ended up as an adult in prison. And so, you know, discipline in these years are so key from 0 to 5. And you think, zero? How do you discipline a zero, you know, like he's an infant? You sleep train. You let them know, this is our house. I'm in charge. You're not going to run it. discipline needs to start early. It needs to be consistent. And the consequences during the discipline years need to be immediate because they don't have an attention span to know 5 minutes ago what that meant. So you got to set clear boundaries. You got to be clear on your expectations and what's your focus, because this can be overwhelming. You can think, well, oh my gosh, there's so much I could be disciplining. And you're one, going to overwhelm them, and you're going to be exhausted. So what do you discipline on? Well, they suggest 3 D's, disobedience, dishonesty, and disrespect. Those are the things that they are like, those are the things we are definitely going to have an immediate reaction or action to. And, you know, this is Calvin, cute as ever, right? And so you think, oh, it's hard to discipline him. But, you know, we get to babysit him every Tuesday, which is a joy. But I can tell when we're around him, what things his parents have said no to. So, you know, this happened just the other night where, he looked at me. He looked at that remote. He looked at me again. And he's like walking toward it. And he's just watching whether I'm going to react. I'm like, oh, yeah. And so I'm like, Calvin, did your mom and dad let you touch that? And he stops. He grabs it and he hands it to me. I was like, he knows. So there, you know, and he's almost 2. So there's a time where you know they understand their expectation, what, you know, and to obey. This was really helpful from James Dobson in his book, Dare to Discipline, another book I read early on. He made a distinction between childish irresponsibility and willful defiance. Because kids are kids. They are going to be irresponsible. They're going to spill their milk. They're going to do all sorts of things. And your discipline needs to be different for those things than they do for when it's like you know, I'm not going to listen to you. It needs to be different. So he says this, willful defiance, as the name implies, is a deliberate act of disobedience. It occurs only when the child knows what his parents expect and then is determined to do the opposite. In short, it is a refusal to accept parental leadership, such as running away when called or screaming insults, acts out of outright disobedience. By contrast, childish irresponsibility results from forgetting. They forget a lot, accidents, mistakes, a short attention span, a low frustration tolerance, and immaturity. He says, in the first instance, the child knows he was wrong and is waiting to see what the parent can do about it. In the second, he has simply blundered into a consequence he did not plan. It is wrong, in my view, to resort to corporal punishment for the purpose of instilling responsibility. Unless, of course, the child has defiantly refused to accept it. So I thought that was really helpful for me to know the difference. It also was helpful in this stage to know that there are different types of discipline. You know, we're training. That's what discipline is. It's training. So it's not just, there's not just one way. So there's natural consequences, right? Where this is an automatic, you make an action and there's an automatic result of that action. For example, he's in this book. This was the first book I read because I liked the title because that's how I felt. I'm like, help, I'm a parent. Good book. But he says, many of your child's misbehaviors have painful built-in consequences that teach them great lessons if you stay out of the way long enough to let them learn. That was my issue. I wanted to, like, rescue, and it's like, no, stop. So, a kid throws a toy, and you tell them, don't throw your toy, it's going to break. And, you know, so they keep throwing it, it breaks. What do? You don't get another toy. You let it be broken. That is their natural consequence. So they have a lot of different examples of that. Another one is logical consequences. This is where you have a logical consequence to what the behavior was. In our house, we had an issue with slamming doors. That was my tendency, to slam a door when I was angry when I was a kid. And so they never saw me as a kid, but that, you know, some of them carried on that trait. And so we had one, it wasn't Jenny, who slammed the door whenever she was angry. And so one day, you were like, okay, we've told her over and over, you can't keep slamming the door because it's starting to come off the frame. And so we took the door away. You're like, you lost your privilege of having a door. Well, this killed her because it was down in our rec room where we have junior high cell group. She was not in junior high. And so she didn't have a door when people were down there. So, you know, yeah, they could walk into her room if they wanted. And so she stopped slamming the door. It worked. So, you know, you got to get creative on what is a logical consequence that you can do when, you know, you need to have a logical consequence. Physical consequences can be like a timeout or, you know, I'm not going to go into the thought of spanking. I don't know what people think on that, you know, do whatever. But you can have a physical consequence or reinforcement. This is where you're reinforcing the positive with a positive, a reward, you know. It's not just about the negative. It's also we're working toward the positive. What give them rewards for what they're doing right. And extinction. This is where you might ignore a temper tantrum. Or you might ignore the whining. You're not going to answer to a whining voice. You know, you might have to train them. Might have to say, I'm not going to listen to a whining voice. But then when they do whine, you can use this technique, you know, just stop listening to them. But we're going to go on to the training years. And this is when you explain the why behind your rules and expectations of your house. And he says, the skills we want our kids to have in public, we must train them in private. And that's what the training years are for, helping our kids gain the skills and values they need to succeed. There are still consequences connected to their actions, but there's a lot more explaining and training. And they're at the age that they can understand what you're saying, and you can explain things to them. Just as an athlete needs tons of practice, so do our kids. Practicing is great during these early training years, the early ones, because everything is fun and nothing is dumb. Later, everything is dumb and nothing is fun, so do it while you can. So true. Get them when they're young, 5, you know, the 6-year-olds. But if you try to do this at 12, they'll be looking at you like you are out of this planet. So you tell your child what to do. You explain why it's important. And then you practice. And you practice, 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 and turn them into habits. So one of the things that they talked about in this book is restoring relationships, which I liked because I thought, you know, a lot of people, adults, don't know how to restore a relationship when they brought damage to it. He says, when honoring others, the chief value in family, disobedience, dishonesty, and disrespect are problematic because they dishonor another person. They damage the relationship. The goal of discipline is to teach your child how to restore the relationship they damaged. You've met plenty of adults who can eat with a fork and tie their shoes, but they've never learned how to restore a broken relationship. Good point. So they gave this example, which I thought was hilarious. Okay, they have 3 kids, a girl and an 8-year-old and a 10-year-old. This was early on. All their kids are adults now. And so these 2 boys were extremely, she didn't go in to explain why, you know, what they did, but they were extremely disrespectful to their babysitter. And so when they came home from their date and they heard, you know, disrespect, all that, she got them up Saturday morning early and had them sit down and write an apology in a note. And then she had them get their money out of their little piggy bank, and they went to the store and bought flowers. And then they went to her work, and they walked through the office to her desk, handed her the flowers, and gave her the apology, and said the apology in person, face to face. And it was very effective. I mean, she describes it like they were like horrified walking through this office. Everybody's looking like, what's happening? And why are these boys giving flowers to this lady? And it was great, very effective. And I thought, that is really good. They gave another example where the oldest one was disrespectful to their mom. And now I think disrespect in the teenage years is a whole, totally different thing. This is in the younger years. Where he was disrespectful to her, and so the dad had him, the son, take her out on a date. And they had a great time. She said it was very awkward at the beginning, but then, you know, they started conversing and they had a good time together, and so they rebuilt their relationship. I thought, that is so good. Well, now we're going on to the coaching years. These are the teenage years. I love this quote. Kids hit puberty and start thinking we know nothing at all. In a flash, they move from being our most adoring fans to slinking in the corners of the public places so they don't die of embarrassment over us. Yeah. How do we parent in these years? We connect more than correct. And I think that is really a good point that they make in this book. Yeah, you're going to try and connect with them more than just constantly correcting. You loosen the tight reins of the training years and move to the sidelines of coaching. So they describe it this way. Coaches don't leave the field. They don't get distracted with other stuff. Oftentimes during this stage, your kids, they don't need you, but you need to be available, because when they do need you, you need to be there. And so there's a lot of times where you're just there and you're like, what the heck am I doing? And it's like, you're available. You need to be available. They watch carefully, call some plays, pull the players off the field from time to time. They encourage their players to run the plays and respond to the situations according to the training that came before. Your goal is to keep them coming to you for guidance and support. So it's that relational aspect. You want to keep influencing them, and it's keeping that relationship. So 3 things that help connecting. 1, cultivate conversations. You want to have conversations with your kids. These often happen in the car when we're going out doing something, because, you know, you don't have to have face-to-face, but you're still together and you can have conversations in the car. This is one suggestion that they make that will block a conversation, and that is a freaking out. This book, for parents only, they say this: don't freak out. Whatever you do, don't freak out in front of your teenager. And their definition of freaking out is any strong emotion. So dial it back. Okay, I'm a person that wears my emotions on my sleeves. This was so hard for me to not react. Example, Jenny and Kalissa. I heard, okay, they were teaching at the blowout camp one summer. And we wanted to go and hear, Joe and I went, and we wanted to hear them teach. And they, I think it was Jenny, I don't know which one, gave the story of being on the bridge of the railroad track over North Broadway at midnight with a train going by. You know, like, here's the train. Here they are. Here's the train. I'm sitting in the audience. I'd never heard this story before. I'm like, don't freak out. I'm sure my eyes were bugging out, but I was like, wow, that went on and I didn't know it. Well, I'm sure a lot more went on that I didn't know. Or when you're teaching your child how to drive or your teenager how to drive, don't freak out when they turn into and you're facing traffic and then a fire squad goes by. Don't freak out. I freaked out. I failed that one, but Joe was really good at teaching driving. So I was thankful that he helped. Another thing that will cultivate connecting is don't bail, let them fail. Don't rescue. This book, How to Raise an Adult, this is a secular book, but I think they got a lot of good points in there. Deciding to allow our kids to have those essential experiences to flail, fail, and fall isn't just a good way to help them learn and grow. It's the best way. He says, mistakes can be life's greatest teacher. And so here are some examples, curveballs that your kids might experience that you don't want to get them out of. You don't want to rescue them from this. Not being invited to a party. Don't go and tell the other family, hey, my kid wasn't invited to your party. Let the kid learn from this. They didn't get invited. You have to then work them through their hurt feelings. Procrastinating on a paper. Don't type it for them. They procrastinated. They should have a natural consequence for that. Missing a show because she was helping grandma, or coming in last at something, forgetting lunch. You know, don't go and give it to them. They'll learn. I'll bring my lunch because mom's not going to bring it to me. Losing a game. Those are all things that, you know, you want them to be prepared to handle in their adult life. And then the last thing that will help in connecting in this age is to get interested in what interests them. So I was thinking of our kids. Okay, Michelle, she loved music. She played guitar. She loved crafts. So, you know, she also, she played an electric guitar, so we invested in that. I mean, in this age, this stage, there's a lot of money that goes out. You know, you take them out to restaurants because that's fun. She was in tennis, so, you know, you get the tennis equipment. With Jenny, she loved to paint, so that was an investment, guitar. She played softball. Joe coached her softball team at one point. Daniel liked guitar also. He played the bass guitar. He and his buddies were in a little band in junior high. Hilarious. We have a video of it. We laugh when we watch it, but it's great. And so, you know, it took money to buy the equipment and stuff, but, you know, it was something he was interested in. He played baseball, and Joe coached his baseball team. And so you're investing in what they like to do. Last stage, the friendship years. This is a stage that we're in now, and I am just truly grateful that I can call my kids my friends. And so in this stage, you got to dial it back. You are no longer responsible. You know, they are adults. And so the unsolicited advice, dial back. You're no longer involved in the minutia of their life. This really hit home to me with our oldest when she turned 18 and then she needed to make an appointment with a doctor. So dumb me, I decided I would make the appointment. And the doctor's like, no, she needs to. She's 18. And so, like, I was like, oh, okay. So she did. And then I'm like, well, what did the doctor say? Well, I wasn't getting anything out of her. And I wanted to call the doctor, but they're not, HIPAA, you know, they're not going to tell me. And so I was like, whoa, I am no longer, that is no longer my role. It was a really different change because she has lupus. And so, you know, there's a lot involved in that. And I was no longer involved in that. Your relationship is more like a friendship, and it's very enjoyable. Helpful tips. Ask, don't tell. Would you like my opinion on this? No? Okay. Or, you know, would you like me to, you know, help you in this? No? Okay. You know, you got to ask. Don't assume they want to know your opinion. They probably have a better opinion anyway. That's what I'm finding. Know your tendencies. If you tend to rescue, you tend to, you know, want to fix things, know that. It's not going to work very well. And you pray, pray, pray. I pray a lot during this stage because, you know, it's out of my hands, but it's in God's hands. So final thought, you know, we've talked a lot today about the things that we do, what we're into, you know, doing to help our kids, train our kids, but we don't want to forget that God has a role here. And I love this quote from A Mother's Heart by Jean Fleming. She says, the goal of parenting is not for us to decide what we want our children to become and then ruthlessly teach, train, squeeze, badger, control them into that mold. Instead, we must recognize that God has already designed them. God already has a mature person and long-range purpose in mind. Our job is to see our children as God does and to involve ourselves in God's plan for them. Like a sculptor, we must try to see the final form straining to break out of the uncut stone. And I thought, you know, that is so true. And you look at what, you know, when David, when he was contemplating God's knowledge of him to God, he said, you made all the delicate inner parts of my body and knit me together in my mother's womb. You watched me as I was being formed in utter seclusion, as I was woven together in the dark in the womb. You saw me before I was born. Every day of my life was recorded in your book, and every moment was laid out before a single day had passed. God knows your kid better than anyone. And so I love this promise, because this is the promise I clung to throughout parenting, is that you can trust in the Lord with all your heart and not lean on your own understanding. Acknowledge him in all your ways, and he will make your path straight. I clung to that. I prayed a lot. All right. Thank you, Lord, for the fact that you are intimately involved not only in our life but in our kids' lives. And you give us resources. You give us community. You give us yourself to do this role as parents. I pray, God, for each of these parents here that you'll continue to guide them and give them wisdom and creativity on how to parent their children and, ultimately work toward what you have for them. Amen.
Thanks for listening. This has been a Dwell Community Church production.